Let's explore what it means to be well.
From meditation, stress management, safer substance use, and sexual health, we will literally talk sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Join us to dive deep into some student health questions. We'll learn about wellness together, try some coping tools, and meet some interesting people.
Your co-hosts, Heather and Craig,
the perfect blend of Campus Health and Wellness Center and Sal's.
Each week, we'll DIY a wellness tool together
and then nerd out and dig into the science behind how it works.
Email your health and wellness related questions to wellpod@durhamcollege.ca to be discussed anonymously on air.
Welcome
to the Wellpod at DC.
So the student question is, I'm an introvert, but I want to be more outgoing. Can I change my personality? So last week we had Kim Sharp on and she talked a little bit about first impressions. She gave us some great ideas on kind of reading your environment and how we can have different personas and different aspects of our personality kind of shine in different moments of our life. We had someone who was literally making first impressions their first week here at Durham College. Jess joined us. She's our new health promotion coordinator. And she shared some of her thoughts on the importance of feeling genuine in how we present ourselves, but then shared a discussion that Jay Shetty was having of how I am what I think you think I am. So I am what I think you think I am. And so this idea that we're actually living in kind of a perception of our perception when it comes to how not only first impressions are formed, but how our identity is formed as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked a little bit about kind of our own first impressions, both kind of for the show, but for each other and how it's been an exciting and fun ride.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Getting to know each other as much as we knew each other to some extent. Now getting to know each other as we back and forth about the topics for the week and our interests and rabbit holes, if you will, that
Absolutely.
We become interested in and go down.
Our love of rabbit holes and the ability to do this.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we wanted to kind of continue with is that conversation that Jess started and Kim started as well around, we want to be mindful of how much emphasis we're placing on how others view us, even though we know it shapes a lot of the components of our identity. And we want to find the space where we're able to show up in this world as we are. So today we're going to talk a little bit about what is personality and very quickly go down some personality theories. I took a whole course in my undergrad and I dusted off this beautiful, very expensive textbook that 19-year-old me said, I will never use this again. And I ate my words last night digging it out. So we're going to explore some personality theories. We're going to really focus on trait theory and something called the Big Five, really tapping into extrovert and introversion, and then end by looking at, can we change our personality? And one of my favorite kind of rabbit holes is the BuzzFeed personality test. So we're going to explore that in a little bit more detail. So when it comes to defining personality, what's really interesting is there's actually not a standard definition that is kind of universally recognized and accepted. According to Britannica Encyclopedia, personality is a characteristic way of thinking, feeling, and behaving, and it embraces mood, attitudes, and opinions, and most clearly expressed in our interactions with other people. Which I found interesting because when I first think of personality, I think of it much more of kind of this internal who I am. But yet when you start exploring a lot of the theories and definitions, is it really emphasizes how much of a kind of external relational component this is.
For sure.
Theories of personality have existed in most cultures throughout most of recorded histories. The word personality originates from Latin persona, which actually means mask. And I think this is a really kind of interesting way for us today to think about personality and kind of the masks that we wear and how we can kind of examine those masks of our identity. The ancient Greeks spent a lot of time in this world as well. They called it temperament. And as a new parent, temperament is a lot of what we're talking about with early childhood development and the emergence of our personalities in infancy, a lot around temperament. And some connections to last week as well that you quickly touched on is that early assumptions and theories, especially in the late 1700s, Gall, for instance, was really interested in that. Do you remember the word for it?
Phrenology.
Phrenology.
Yeah.
And it's the measurement of the bumpy bumps on our head. I think we have an image that might be flashing up on the screen right now. Mm-hmm. And they truly developed the science of being able to kind of feel the bumps in your head and then made some theories on your personality. Yeah. I would love to learn how to do that.
Yeah. Oh, you're funny.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. But as you stated last week, there was not a lot of science back mm-hmm. behind this. So personality is an individual's consistent pattern of feeling, thinking, and behaving. So the research is trying to dive into that consistency, what's happening, mm-hmm. not just the odd time, but the consistent patterns of feelings, thinking, and behaving.
And one thing I came across that was kind of interesting in looking up definitions too is like what it's not. And it was kind of eye-opening for me, right? So I came across something that defined it very similarly to what you said, but then said it's not a set of skills, mm. right? It's not biological, physical differences, right? It's, well, as you said, this unique set of behaviors and experiences and feelings, but then related to the other people in a way like that makes you, but in relation to, as you said, maybe interaction with other people. And
absolutely.
So on.
That skill piece, I think, is important because I sometimes go there too when I think mm-hmm. personality, the skills.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So during the early part of the 20th century, psychologists really became interested in trying to understand personalities. And one of the kind of most famous, maybe even one of the most famous psychologists as a whole is an Austrian physician and psychologist that you might know, Sigmund Freud. Mm-hmm. And we have an image popping up on the screen. I think it's really interesting if you've grown up with an image of mm-hmm. who you think Freud is. What were your thoughts when I showed you this picture of him?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I can't even picture the face or not, but or what the differences are, but you showed me earlier and it was like, that's not what I was picturing
that's
him
not
to
Freud.
Look like at all for whatever reason. And it might be like stage of life that he was at versus I've happened to see younger pictures or something. But yeah, it was just very different.
He seems to be a very kind of grumpy guy. Right? Like he seems very kind of stoic, especially mm-hmm. in a lot of the pictures that I was finding kind of his older age years. But he really helped found what is known today as the psychodynamic approach to understanding personality. And so during the late 1880s, Freud argued that we rarely understand why we do what we do. However, in hindsight, we make up a lot of explanations for our behaviors after the fact. So he was really interested in this. He didn't think that we had a lot of necessarily foresight into our behaviors. We didn't necessarily understand why we do what we do in the moment, before the moment, but we certainly have a good opportunity afterwards to kind of unpack and examine why we do these things. He's a really good example, too, of the embodiment of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. If you even just go on Wikipedia, you can slowly start to see how he's a very interesting man, surrounded by a lot of controversy, not just with sex stuff, but he did a lot of work with cocaine and trying to kind of build ideas around personality, utilizing cocaine as a kind of conduit to understand that. So really interesting guy, but his theories are really still talked about and hotly debated how much relevance they still have. Because a lot of our science is kind of now saying that we're not thinking these theories were correct, but he is still held so much in pop culture that most individuals in Canada would recognize his name.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things he talked about is that the adult personality emerges as a composite of early childhood experiences based on how these experiences were consciously and unconsciously processed within our different developmental stages. So you're going to see an image on the screen of an iceberg, and he talked about how our mind is divided up into three components, and very much like the iceberg, some of it and a majority of it is kind of below the surface, and this would be the unconscious. So we're not actively aware of how these are influencing the way that we think, feel, and behave. So one of the components is what is called the id. And this is entirely unconscious. It's really below the water. And it is our uncoordinated instinctual desires. It's your instant gratification. It's your urges. It's pleasure now. That's your id completely submerged. You're also going to see on the screen another part of our personality and our sense of being that is called the superego. And what do you assume this is just based on just the linguistics of that superego? Any thoughts?
Not really. Like, ego comes across as, like, yeah, personality that you see, right? That person has such an ego or whatever. So
if you think about superheroes.
Okay. So over and above extra strength.
These are our internalized ideals that we acquire through our parents, family, culture, and our society. It's our sense of morality. It tells us the things that we shouldn't be doing. It's your Jiminy Cricket. Right? Okay. It's telling you this is how you're supposed to be acting. It's your duties, your obligations, strive for perfection. And if we fail to live up to these expectations, this is where our guilt and shame tend to hide in the iceberg. Right? So it's kind of our rules and standards for good behavior. And it works to suppress the urges of the ego, right? Don't have pleasure now, wait, id, resist. Mm-hmm. But it tries to also make our ego behave in morally ways versus realistic ways. Because our ego, you're going to see in that iceberg, is a little bit outside of the water. Some of it is subconscious as well, or kind of unconscious under the water there. But our ego is actually the judge. It's the mediator that is trying to do things realistically. So not with morals like the super ego, but realistically, it's our reality principle trying to delay that instant gratification and kind of meet with an appropriate time, appropriate outlet, kind of controlling some of our decisions that we're making in life through our behaviors. Erik Erikson, a German-American development psychologist who worked at Harvard, Berkeley, Yale, all the big institutions with a lot of money to do some interesting research, he modified a lot of Freud's work and tried to build it on it. And he developed what is called the theory of psychosocial development. And you're going to see an image on the screen that highlights his 8 stages of personality development. And what's really interesting is very in line with Freud, the belief of we're going to kind of hit different stages in life. There's going to be conflict, and how we resolve that conflict and come out of this experience is what is forming our personality. Mm. And so we see infancy, and the idea too is not just kind of the stages that we go through, but they're timed with life development as well. So infancy, when you're an infant, it's about trust and mistrust. Early childhood, it's about autonomy and shame. Preschool, it's about intuitive versus guilt. All the way up, I'll skip to like young adulthood, intimacy versus isolation. So our college population here, according to these theories, this is kind of the big life stuff they're going through right now. And then in middle adulthood, you might be going through kind of the stagnation that you're feeling right now in life, or how to continue to propel yourself forward. So that's kind of one world of personality theories and how they were developed. But a whole other world that we've actually touched on before is behavioral theories of personality. And a reminder that behavioralism is the idea that we learn behaviors through reward and punishments. And so our personality is the result of that interaction between ourselves, our environment, and the reinforcements that we're getting. So we talked about Skinner weeks ago. He's a very radical behavioralist, and he did not believe in free will. Free will is an illusion, and all human action is a result of conditioning. And you might remember my bestie, aka arch nemesis, John B. Watson, who I have a strong dislike for. He did the little Albert experiments, right? Introduce a little creature to a small child, make a really loud, scary noise to then make somebody afraid of that. So he very much said, a reminder, you know, I can control personality. I can make you a doctor. I can make you a lawyer, all through conditioning. And that we now know that that's absolutely incorrect. Some other personality theories take ego more, though, as a self-concept area. And we see this in the development of another branch called humanistic approaches. And we can turn to Carl Rogers, for instance. He's an American psychologist that did a lot of work in the 60s. And one of the founders of the humanistic approach, or sometimes referenced as a client-centered approach. So we see this in a lot of social work and nursing, kind of this idea of how important it is to come through a student-centered or a client-centered perspective. You're going to see an image on the screen of his concepts and his theory around self-concept. And you're going to kind of see 3 different rings around the ideal self. So this is your vision and the ambitions of who you think you are. That's your ideal self. Then he said we have a real self, and this is our self-image, and it's kind of currently how we see ourselves, but also how we're being perceived. But then there's this other area called self-esteem, which is more how much we value and worth what we have. Mm-hmm. So the idea that all of these kind of merge to form our idea of personality or self-concept. Mm-hmm. But we can also look at personality from an evolutionary and biological perspective. Craig, did you find some science behind personality?
For sure. So kind of maybe continuing along or just different theories as we're talking about. There's also the aspect related to some of what we've talked about over the few weeks here, right? In terms of what's going on in our mind, controlling various things, but now we're on to personality, right? Mm-hmm. What is the structure of our mind, lead to in terms of how our personality ends up, right? Or not even structure, because there's the anatomical structure side of things, but then the physiological side in terms of hormones and whatnot, and more or less in somebody, and then the effects that it has on the personality, right? Two people with even, let's say, same structure, but one has more of this hormone and the other has less. Is that what ultimately affects the two different personalities that are coming out between them? And I'll come back to that in a minute and go a little bit more in depth there, because it's maybe a little bit more of interest, or well, how I tend to think about, like, in terms of the evolutionary theories, right? We're all fairly familiar with evolution. Charles Darwin, 1800s, right? Mm-hmm. Sailed on a ship and found some finches and described some stuff. But in terms of overall, then, people started, how does that relate to personality? And they kind of go hand in hand, at least for me, with my background of biology and evolutionary biology, is, how our brains ultimately formed over time is what this theory is tied to, right? My ancestors, functioned in a certain way and they survived. Mm-hmm. Here I am today. Those personalities, right, were part of
their survival,
right? As much as we can, like, in your introductory biology class, it's like brown hair, blonde hair, this, that. Okay, but then our personality is in there, and then one leads to better survival, as you said, than the other. So my personality is a result of my ancestors had those personalities, and they survived. So now here I am, right? Mm-hmm. So a couple of examples would be, fear of snakes as an example, right? Is, okay, snakes were bad. The people who weren't so afraid of them early on evolutionarily, right? Is they got bit by poisonous snakes. They did not survive. Well, the ones who were more leery of snakes then ultimately survived. Mm-hmm. Their offspring, and oversimplifying, but we're now afraid of snakes. And then that continued, so that maybe not everybody, but a lot of people, if you were walking through the woods and came across a snake, would be veer around quite a bit for survival's sake. That's part of my personality at that point, right? A fear of snakes in that sense, right? It's interesting when you get into other things, sarcasm or personality stuff like that. It's like, I can be pretty good at that. I don't know how that allowed my ancestors to survive better than the other. If anything, I don't know how I'm here if they had my sarcasm, because it probably led down bad roads. As much as I'm being silly, is that part of my personality of maybe being a little bit silly? Hey, is that from evolutionarily? I come from a line of people who joked around.
Yeah, and sarcastic jokesters.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But going back to the biological aspect of things, again, because I think they're kind of intertwined from my background, it's the biological, as I mentioned, is more that anatomical structure of our brains and physiological functions of our brain leading to personalities. And so as an example, if a certain part of my brain maybe has a little bit more gray matter, does that lead to my personality being a little different than yours because it's a different part of your brain that has, a little bit more gray matter? Because the different parts of our brains control different aspects of things, right? Mm-hmm. At the back of our head, we have our occipital lobe for seeing things, right? So then, or processing what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. if somebody has a little bit more of the processing material, the gray matter of their brain, then do they kind of process that a little bit different than myself with a little bit less, for example? And so there's interesting research on the anatomical side, and then, like I said, even on the physiological side, various hormones that we produce, do they have an effect? Like testosterone, for example, I came across, you know, that it relates to sociability, right? Effectivity, aggressiveness, sexuality. Okay, so is there a difference between personality of the person who makes, you know, this much and the person who makes this much? You know, not a huge difference, but then is it enough of a difference to lead to personality?
So interesting.
Differences among people. And so it ties into, from a historical perspective, some of the stuff I know that you will get into down the road here in terms of the five dimensions of personality and so on, and I'm excited for that. But some of the theorists who worked on this came up with some of their own theories about, you know, what aspects ultimately are controlled behavior-wise, right, based on what's going on biologically. And so one of the and I want to get his name right here, sort of more famous people who was working on this research was Hans Esenick, if I'm pronouncing that.
I gave you the hard one.
You gave me the hard one, thank you. But did I get it right? Okay. But again, he was very much into this, like, aspects of our personality are linked to these biological processes going on in our mind. And so we'll come back to dopamine, our friend that we've mentioned any good number of times, even some of the structure parts of the brain among different types of personality. But one of the major things that he had in his model, he said it's two parts of your brain specifically that are tied to behavior. And so he talked about the reticular formation as part of your brain and the limbic system. I think
we talked about
the limbic system. Do you know what the reticular formation is in the brain? So it's a portion of your brainstem that's involved in processing incoming sensory information and then sending it to the right part of your brain for processing.
Interesting.
And so it's very involved in arousal and consciousness, right? Is this something ultimately that I need to be aware of? As a really quick example, you know, there might have been a noise out in the hallway a few moments ago that neither of us perceived because it wasn't something that was important. So the sound came to our ear, went to the RAS system, and the RAS system said, eh, and then didn't send it to the part of our brain involved in hearing because it wasn't all that important for our survival in that case. So it's tied to consciousness. And then just to remind those listening, the limbic system is a number of areas of the brain, but involved in emotion, behavior, motivation is what I think we touched upon, and long-term memory as well. Those two areas in our area on memory a few weeks back.
Yeah.
And then he came up with this three factors that will, like I said, tie into the five factor model we'll get to after the first song here. But he talked about extroversion, neuroticism, and psychotism. Yeah, I got the hard words this week.
You did get the hard words this week.
But the extroversion is this level of how much we interact with others. The neuroticism is our emotional stability / instability. And then the psychotism is aggression and interpersonal hostility. And so he was interested in the reticular formation in terms of the arousal consciousness and then the limbic system, the emotion behavior, and how it affects those three aspects of how at least he defined our personality was on these scales of
interesting
very much.
Well, talking about these scales, we'll continue this conversation. It's a whole field called trait theory. And so after our musical break, we'll continue to dive into this. And don't forget that you can follow us on social media at DCSA Media Hub, as well as at Wellness at DC. Here is Ego, the radio edit by Willie William, right here on riotradio.ca. Thank you.
qui t'a devenir mégalo. Viens donc chatouiller mon ego. Allez, allez, allez. Laisse-moi entrer dans ta matrice. Goûter à tes délices. Personne ne peut m'en dissuader. Allez, allez, allez. Je ferai tout pour t'accompagner. Tellement je suis borné. Je suis bien dans ma bulle. Allez, allez, allez. Tout est beau, tout est rose. Tant que je l'impose. Dis-moi qui est le plus beau. Allez, allez, allez.
Welcome back to the Well Pod at DC from the Media Hub on riotradio.ca. So trait theory is a really interesting area of contemporary personality studies, and it's typically where many of us, if you've ever done a personality test before, you probably have started to enter trait theory, the realm of it. It's generally a little bit more empirically science-based, so it's based on observation and experiences. They do a lot more experiments in this kind of realm of personality theories. So it's a little bit more precise than the psychoanalytical area that we were looking at earlier with some of those theories. But it still faces a lot of challenges in research because a lot of our personality, we're understanding a big factor of that is culture. And culture gives meaning to our behaviors, how they're being expressed, and we're going to be calling them traits in this segment here. But so not just the meaning of them, but how they are expressed as well. So it can be really complicated to start really unpacking personality. But some theories that were done by an American psychologist, Alport, he was one of the pioneers of trait theory. And he believed that we could kind of measure and list personality traits and traits he saw as kind of habitual patterns of those behaviors and thoughts and emotions. So very kind of similar definition that we've already been discussing. Trait theory suggests that some traits may give someone an advantage, especially when we talk about things like leadership. I had a really great conversation with Lucy, the manager from Student Development here at Durham College. She's one of our supporters, which is always nice for our colleagues to be joining us. And her and her wonderful team do some great work cultivating self-development and the development of self. And they utilize some of the different trait theory that we're going to be getting into today. But Alport came up with 4,000 different traits. And so when this was kind of first rolling out, they were like, 4,000 is way too much. Mm-hmm. The individual that you mentioned had three. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, well, that's too little to explain personality. Alport believed we had kind of three categories of traits, what are called cardinal traits. So these are your rare kind of dominant passions and obsessions, but they're a little bit more rare. Your central traits are more of that foundation area of your personality. They make up who you are. And they're found kind of in a degree in every person is kind of what his theory was at the time. So more of a sliding scale as a trait. Secondary traits are those only seen in certain circumstances. So maybe at work or when you're at home with certain friends. So they kind of pop their head like Pokeroo every once in a while. Mm-hmm. The most contemporary tests that we find are often based on what we call the Big Five. So the five-factor model of personality are five fundamental underlying trait dimensions that are based in research, stable across time, culture, and explain a substantial portion of our behavior. Started in the late 50s, but didn't really become popular until Goldberg brought them out in the 1990s. He was an American personality psychologist through the University of Oregon, and they developed this model, and it's called OCEANS as an acronym to remember. So the O stands for openness to experience. So do you consider yourself curious or cautious? If you had to pick one. And it's a sliding scale.
Depending on the situation,
yep.
Curious.
You're more curious. Conscientiousness, so are you more organized or careless?
Organized.
Extroversion, so outgoing or reserved?
More extroverted.
More extroverted. Agreeableness, more friendly and compassionate or critical and rational? Where would you be, do you think?
Maybe we should ask somebody else.
Right? And then the last one, the N on OCEANS, was the neuroticism that you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier. So kind of how sensitive, nervous are you versus how resilient and confident are you? Myself, you can take some tests for free online. We'll put on our Instagram account, at wellness@DC, some links for you. But the International Personality Item Pool, it's a collection of all the different personality tools that are out there. They're free for you to take online, but they're long. So I think the one was 60 questions that some people in this room did not feel had meaning.
Let's say in theory, I knew that person and then they had limited time and saw 60 questions and then said, another day.
Mm-hmm. Another day. So myself, when I took the test, I had high openness, average conscientiousness and extroversion, high agreeableness, and low neuroticism. And this very much, I felt, was relevant and very much in line with my perception on my own sense of personality. So in this world, those are the traits, but there's also type theory in personality. It's a bit of a battle. Mm-hmm. Is personality a trait that is more of like a sliding scale? Traits are more quantitative versus our types, which are more categories, and we're more set in type theory. Type theory, though, is another really popular one. Have you heard of Myers-Briggs?
Yes.
You heard of Myers-Briggs? I see some head nods, right? So Myers-Briggs, it's this self-reporting questionnaire that kind of assesses your personality. The problem is, though, is it's a self-report. And so the reliability and the validity in it, it has huge significant scientific psychometric deficiencies. However, we use it in a lot of corporate settings, job interviews. Mm-hmm. I've seen in some cases people have hired somebody based on their Myers-Briggs results over others. You know, the idea that it can kind of tell you how someone's going to fit in your team and work in your workplace. Some questions on ethics here. But when we looked at this, you're going to see an image pop up on our screen here. With Myers-Briggs, essentially there are four different dimensions. Introversism is the I versus extroversism, which is the E. You could be sensing or more based in your intuition. there's the T for thinking or an F for feeling. So again, kind of what type are you in the last cluster is judging versus perceiving. But what's interesting is we can take, I think it makes about 16 different personalities, but you might see in pop culture, what they'll do is they'll use something and find a way to kind of link it with these 16 different personalities. Mm. So up on the screen now, you might see an Office version. So each character from the television show, The Office, yeah, they have found a way to kind of connect it there. And mm-hmm. So interesting kind of think about how these can show up in pop culture. A little bit scary to think about though, how we're maybe using them for employment in some mm-hmm. other areas in our world. The idea of extroversion and introversion, and I can't pronounce those words very well, were introduced by Carl Jung. And he has this whole field of what he calls archetypes. So he was a Swiss mm-hmm. psychiatrist. He was supposed to be Sigmund Freud's heir and like the next Sigmund Freud, but they had big beef with each other and they got in a big dramatic fight in the psychology world. But he was really the first to introduce this idea of an introvert or an extrovert. And what's interesting is we can find it both in type and trait theories on personality. Extroversion is continued through all mm-hmm. the different theories. So it's kind of the one foundational, similar type trait yeah. aspect here. And we find it both in pop culture and our everyday lexicon mm-hmm. as well. What we're also finding, though, is there might be some genetic markers mm-hmm. that we can find here, some aspects with hormones. And again, the amygdala is being brought up here. So tell us, Craig, what's the science behind being an extrovert or an introvert?
So in terms of what we were talking about before, the first song with Hans Esnick, mm-hmm. He was one of the people among many who were doing research, again, because you said it's like very consistent in each of these different personality traits, types, etc. Mm-hmm. That comes up. So he, among others, were looking at, as I mentioned earlier, things like dopamine. Mm. And then dopamine's role in terms of introversion and extroversion. And one thing that's come out, and dopamine, as you recall, is kind of a number of things, but sort of a feel-good, if you will, hormone, among other things. But introversion and extroversion, or introverts and extroverts, there's differences in amount of dopamine that they have.
Interesting.
And so sort of to summarize what's there is kind of the introvert has more dopamine than the extrovert. Mm. And so the introvert is more able to be happy, if you will, and again, not the, you know, only word here for what the dopamine does, but happy. Like, I just need a little bit more dopamine and then I'm satisfied. I have all the dopamine that I need, if you will, to be. Yeah. Versus the extrovert has a little bit less basal dopamine. That was the word I was trying to come up with, right? Such that, okay, the extroversion might be related to, I need to sort of go outside of myself in order to have my brain give me that shot of dopamine.
So, that is so interesting.
Where if I was to use us as an example, and this gets into something we'll talk a little bit about later, but let's say you're an introvert, I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
Right? Looking at our brains measuring dopamine is your brain is more or less already satisfied whether you work or like interact with somebody or not. And my brain is not so much. So it's seeking that outward, you know, I want to interact with that next person and have a conversation because I now have a bit more dopamine.
I find that so fascinating. For sure. And I came across some studies, and I can't quote them because I don't have them in front of me, but extroverts were seeing possibly a higher rate of substance misuse.
Interesting.
Which I think very much speaks to right? Of that kind of seeking of that dopamine hit.
Yeah, for sure.
Very fascinating.
And then even going back to Hans here, I'll use his first name just so I don't mess his last name up anymore. But research in terms of related to structure of brain, and not necessarily that he did this himself, but then tied to the dopamine is, and actually on screen, we'll look at a couple pictures here. We'll look at the introvert pathway first. and the various portions of the brain that are connected when an introvert is getting sensory information. And in the picture, you see the picture of the brain and the information coming up through the brainstem. We talked about the RAS before the first song, and then projecting out to different parts of the brain, including the prefrontal cortex that comes up, has come up often, which starting there in terms of structure, research shows introverts tend to have more gray matter, that processing material of the brain, more gray matter in that prefrontal cortex. And you can see the little lines going to many different parts of the brain and interconnecting to make connections about these sensations, the sensory information that's coming in. And so I think the interesting thing to me, the shock, if you will, is if we go to the second picture of the extrovert's pathway, what people will see is that there are a lot less connections. And that might seem kind of negative at first, like, okay, the extrovert, their brain is not as connected or whatnot. And it's, a little bit of structure. It's not smart or anything like that. But the processing can happen that much faster because it's maybe not going as much to certain parts of the brain and so on, and not stimulating certain parts of the brain. So then there's maybe that more, okay, you know, tell me more. I've processed that already. Let's, okay, now you say something and I say something.
You're more sociable because you're able maybe to take on more.
That's a very good way of saying it, right? And so then you have some of that personality that comes out of the introvert who likes to get information from, let's say, that staff meeting, didn't say much, goes home, comes the next day, most brilliant idea of how we can move forward, right? But sometimes you have that during the meeting. It might be they didn't seem very interested, or they didn't whatever, because of those impressions that we get.
My whole life is flashing before my eyes. I need time to process.
For sure. Right? And we have a bias in our culture, and we'll talk a little bit more about bias after the next break. But I think we have a bias in our culture for that fast talker up at the front of the stage telling you how it is and so on. But at the same time, we tend to see the end product. A lot of those people at the front of the stage are often introverts, right? Sometimes some people that come to mind, like a Steve Jobs, right, is an introvert. Well, but he got up every year and told you all the fantastical new things that Apple was coming out with and was part of that processing to develop those things, right? So then we have this assumption, oh, he must have been an extrovert because he's up there on stage and so on, right?
Yeah.
I go down a little bit of a side tangent there, but it seems that at least some of it comes back to how our brains are wired, like I said, in terms of more gray matter, less gray matter, more connections among the different parts of our brain, and even slightly different amounts of hormones that are kicking around in there.
So interesting.
For sure.
What I took away is I have more gray matter as an introvert. So we get that, hey, Evan? So coming up after our musical break, we'll wrap up very quickly talking about Brian Little and some of his beliefs on how malleable personality is. And we'll talk about those trendy BuzzFeed personality tests. Don't forget, you can follow us on at DCSA Media Hub, as well as at Wellness at DC. Here is Self by Khalid, and right here on riotradio.ca.
Ran away from miles. It's getting hard for me to breathe. Cause the man that I've been running from is inside of me. I tell him keep it quiet, so hardly does he speak. Cause he wants to keep his distance, but it's hard for him to leave. He knows I hear him crying. I don't know how to save him. I can't even save myself. There's many people dying. I've always been afraid. Not that I'm scared of living. I'm scared of feeling pain. I don't need another hand. I need a couple suggestions. Oh,
always had a little trouble with self-reflection. Does my raw emotion make me less of a man? Always had a little trouble with self-reflection. I've been so used to winning, it was hard for me to lose. I know there's nothing wrong with me, there's just something wrong with you. So I've been making changes, been working on my health. No more competition, can't compete against myself. Nah, 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 I'm not doing this to be loved, oh no. I've been doing this to be remembered. Let the people hate if they want to. Help the ones around me get it on too. If I die tomorrow and I'm gone, I'm gone. Let the blood run out. Let the garbage run. I'll be forever now. I don't need another hand, I need a couple suggestions. Always had a little trouble with self-reflections. Does my raw emotion make me less of a man? Always had a little trouble with self-reflections. I don't need another hand, I need a couple suggestions. Always had a little trouble with self-reflection. Does my raw emotion make me less of a man? Always had a little trouble with self-reflection.
Welcome back to the Well Pod at DC from the Media Hub on riotradio.ca. For time, we had to cut out a song, but it is on our playlist. So if you go to our Instagram at Wellness at DC, we'll see it. And it is a song called This Is Me from The Greatest Showman, which highlights Barnum's and the circus kind of life and creation. It's by Keisha. And she sings in the song, "This is me. I am who I am meant to be." And so this kind of question of, you know, who are we, is something that I have childhood memories of reflecting on and pondering as an introvert and doing a lot of self-reflection. I remember in magazines and different books, there would be like personality tests that I would fill out. And BuzzFeed is really trendy over the last about 10 years. It's been increasing. And you may have seen some of the quizzes that pop up. Everything from like, what Disney princess are you, to what type of pizza are you? So I'm going to ask the room, Evan, what type of pizza were you? Do you remember?
I have it here.
Yeah?
I am a mushroom and onion pizza.
A mushroom and onion. I am a mushroom and onion as well. So say of what you want, Craig. And we're about to say how these are basically bogus. But Evan and I are both introverts and share a lot of traits. And we are both a mushroom and onion pizza. What type of pizza were you?
I was pepperoni.
You sure were. You are totally a pepperoni.
I was also
pizza.
Ariel, just so everybody knows. Okay. Thanks.
Oh, I always wanted to be Ariel, but I was not Ariel.
I don't know
I'm
if I am
Ariel.
Because, yeah, I will
you would
get
totally
to
be an
why
Ariel.
I don't know which one.
Right? So it's interesting. We know there's an aspect of these tests that probably is bogus, that's probably not based in science, and BuzzFeed tests are not based in theoretical research and deep testing. But it, I think, speaks to this human nature of us wanting to know ourselves and seek out what is personality. And many believe personality is immeasurable, and yet we continue to try to identify what it is, especially inside of ourselves. Psychology Today wrote an article in 2019 called "Why Do We Like Personality Tests, Even the Bad Ones?" And they found three reasons. They believe that we, despite knowing that the results are probably inadequate, we want to learn about ourselves, we want to feel that we belong, and we want to understand others. And I think this really speaks to our human nature, And not just why we fill out BuzzFeed tests at 2 a.m. in the morning. But, it's interesting to think about also that we might want to be a little bit cautious because the results that we get back from these tests can affect how we process them and our biases and how we kind of see ourselves as something that we are going to touch on. So can we change our personality? This was something that was brought up by the student question. And so wanting to shift our personality, not just bring awareness to it and understand it, is very common. Freud suggested that personality is set by the age of 5. Modern psychologists suggest that overall personality is fairly fixed, but it is kind of stable but malleable in some aspects throughout a lifetime. And actually, Brian Little, he is a researcher, wrote a really great book that you would actually love when you're allowed to get some more books in your life. 2014, he wrote Me, Myself, and Us, The Science of Personality and the Art of Well-Being. And we have an image popping up on the screen here of his book and himself. He provides a lively, thought-provoking, and ultimately optimistic look at the possibilities and perils of being ourselves and the downsides of trait personality. He believes all dimensions and have implications for our well-being, so he sees value in them, but really wants us to be cautious when we claim them as core sense of our identity. We reduce our degree of freedom to be freely, fully human. So he says, use them for some form of self-monitoring, but make sure that you still recognize that there's much more to you than just this trait or just this type. And his books kind of explores the cognitive goggles we use to understand ourselves. His TED Talk in 2017, Who Are You Really?, dives deep into this. It's so funny. You have to watch the TED Talk. It's a great one. And he believes that we are more than just a bunch of traits, and that the capacity to shift between these traits is crucial, and says we have the ability to choose, select, and empower the best forms of our personality. So what did you find here? Because I know we had a quick discussion about the pressure of maybe being kind of stuck in our type as an introvert or an extrovert, but also kind of your dislike of personality tests, although pepperoni pizza, I think, really, really sums up your personality.
I'll have to check out what that even means. What are these words? So there are two aspects to my dislike of these personality things, though I've learned a lot even here today of my own misunderstanding of how I process them being presented to me originally, right?
Thinking maybe about, you need some more gray matter as an introvert to slow down that processing.
I know. But the aspect of introvert, extrovert, and the you know, are you an introvert? Are you an extrovert? Is something that was a challenge to me. So sort of being put in a box, and that like scale aspect you mentioned before was something it actually took me a long time to realize. And there was even a time in my life that was poor mental health wise, where I would say I would describe myself as an extrovert. I think other people would describe me as that. But it was a time where, you know, not necessarily as healthy as I am now, but it was, you know, I want time to go do stuff by myself. I enjoy doing stuff by myself. I want to get away from people, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And like, which there's nothing wrong with, but my brain was, but you're an extrovert, what's wrong with you? Versus that, I ended up watching something that talked about that sliding scale, and then you emphasize it here as well, but the sliding scale where it's, you're not this or that, you're somewhere in there. Maybe I need, you know, whatever amount of time to recharge and so on.
Yeah.
And then I'm also a classic overthinker. So you ask me a question on one of these and it, 60 questions, I would still be filling it in right now because it's like, where is, you know, where am I on this scale or whatnot? But it comes down to, you know, it depends on the situation, depends on lots of things. And so I might be pepperoni pizza right now, but other times I might be a little bit of
mushroom
and onion thrown in there as well.
In 1 minute.
Yes.
Very quickly, could you summarize what the Barnum effect is?
So this is something that ties into that too, in terms of our bias of what we think we are when we do these little tests and so on. And so the idea is you keep things general enough and it almost describes anybody, and our bias is to see ourselves in the description, right? Mm. It's a cognitive bias.
What's my...
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So what zodiac sign? I got it right. What
I'm a Pisces through and through.
So let's see here on my list of all the different zodiac signs: imaginative and sensitive, compassionate and kind, selfless and unworldly, intuitive and sympathetic. Do you think that describes
That's
you?
That's me, yeah.
Can I ask what your zodiac sign is? Sorry?
Libra.
Let me find it on
Libra.
Here.
Libra.
Okay, don't answer the question. Diplomatic and urbane, romantic and charming, easygoing and sociable, idealistic and peaceable. Don't answer. Do you think some of those words describe you?
No.
No?
That's not me.
Not at all?
No.
Interesting. Because here's the thing. I asked people in my office, right, which ones, and read some that were, you know, mm-hmm. maybe not necessarily the right ones, or they mm-hmm. looked at, you know, yeah. and yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
That's me, right? Or depending on if I read some of the... Oh, that's not me, or some of them are, some of them aren't, because sometimes kind of related, right, is it's such a generic thing to say,
general
diplomatic
thing.
And urbane, romantic and charming.
What's your zodiac sign?
My zodiac sign is Aries.
Well, that makes sense why you don't believe in zodiac signs as much. So,
wow.
Big takeaway from today's show
yeah.
is personality should be, but personality is malleable, and we shouldn't feel like we are constricted in these boxes. And so to that student, and any student that's kind of looking to maybe change their personality, two sides of the coin, you can be malleable, you can adjust and adapt. As Kim talked about, you can pivot to different environments. But, you know, get to know yourself and find spaces and people that embrace you for who you are and feel that you belong and don't feel like you need to change. Next week is going to be our last show of the season. We're going to talk about cold exposure, but also how stress is not a bad thing in our life and maybe how it can help us as well. Don't forget, books, playlists, and tools mentioned in our episodes is on our Instagram at wellness@DC. And our last song playing us out today is Everybody's Changing by... Do you know who the artist is?
Keen,
right here on riotradio.ca.
Everybody's changing and I don't